Hear me, see me?
Yep.
All right. What is happening, team? Welcome to another episode of Anabolic Radio with your host, Coach Hawk from Hawk Fit Coaching and Legion Athletics. Today, I am joined by none other than Steve Hall himself from across the pond in the UK. Steve is a natural bodybuilder and the founder of Revive Stronger, which is his coaching service and his podcast. Now, I've been in the game for a while, and I have to say Steve is one of the first people that got into a bodybuilding-type podcast. So it not only presents massive value through facilitating conversation between professionals, but he's also been very consistent with it over the years. That said, we're honored to have someone that walks the walk on the potty, and without further ado, I'd like to give the floor to Steve. How are you doing today, Steve? And for some of the audience listening who are not familiar with you, why don't you go ahead and give them an intro about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thank you for the intro. And yeah, thinking about podcasts, like there's just so many now, right? It's I think people realize how the barrier to entry is relatively low. And I think back to my first episodes of the podcast and how bad the quality of them were, even down to my hosting obviously wasn't great, but just down to like my internet was terrible. So the quality of like the audio and everything was just all over the shop. But because there was so little supply, I managed to grow it still. And thankfully, we're in such a great industry where people are so humble and willing to give their time. I got to have some amazing people on the podcast. And yeah, if there's something I'm good at, Ishak, is consistency. I will keep going, especially when I get into something that I really enjoy. So to think that the podcast is going to come to like having been going for a decade, this will be my decade of competing. So my first show was 2014. You mentioned I'm a kind of natural bodybuilder. And so 2024 is now my decade of kind of being a competitive bodybuilder, which is quite cool. So it'll be cool to see the podcast get to that point too. And hopefully it's improved just as much as I feel like my physique has, because I feel like the physique has come on quite a ways as well. And like you mentioned, in terms of my kind of background, I've been coaching now for actually a decade online, kind of full time. So I initially was a PT for a very short period of time. It was the same year as when I was competing. So you can imagine what that was like in terms of like your first comp prep, the energy levels, trying to be a one-on-one personal trainer as someone who's fairly introverted anyway, low confidence. It kind of sucked. So that's where I actually ended up just being like, hey, I like spreadsheets. I'll sit behind a desk and I can tell people how to train and what to eat. Let's do online stuff. And it kind of grew from there. So that was kind of the first instance of Revive Stronger. And some kind of background to the name Revive Stronger was essentially what the impetus was for me getting into bodybuilding was a head injury that landed me in hospital. And so I got into the gym and I kind of had some idea of what I was doing. I grew like the newbie gains from like the age of 15 to like 20. But then, yeah, I would do running and rowing and football and all these various sports on top of it. There was no specificity, as it were. And then on one of these runs, I got hit by a van and I had a kind of pretty traumatic head injury that led me to be in hospital for a month or so. And I had some long-term ill effects of that. But the main thing is like I just lost all confidence in doing lots of things in life, including running and sports. And so I just like doubled down in the gym because I was super skinny on coming out of the hospital. So I regained that lost muscle and more, not in the best way, but I then used that opportunity to just learn. And that's where I came across the evidence-based industry. Eventually, it took me a while to get there. So I came across Alan Aragon, Lyle McDonald. These were some of my first influences. Matt Ogus was a big influence on me, as well as 3DMJ. And I know they're huge influences on you, because I think that's where I first saw you, Ishak, was like some sort of YouTube collaboration with Matt Ogus at some point. So it's cool to have seen you come up in the industry as well and continue to be consistent with natural bodybuilding and obviously in the coaching industry as well. So yeah, now Revive Stronger has gone strength to strength. We have Pascal Flohr, who's my kind of business partner. We have a coaching team, and yeah, the podcast has grown and we've been able to run amazing seminars with people like Mike Israetel. And now it's just about continuing down that path, and hopefully I can be as impressive as the kind of the business journey, as it were. I think they probably fall in line a little bit. We'll see. As we were talking off air, Ishak, you're in prep as well, and you just want to bring something you're proud of, and that's always been my driving factor. Because if I competed to like do well in shows, and that was my driving force, I don't think I'd be keeping going. I think I would have stopped by now. So it's just the fact I love the process in the gym of ever bettering myself. And then there's something unique about a contest prep, and you obviously learn a lot about yourself and also how to help others through that too, which has been important. So that's a little bit of background at least.
Great points. And you definitely have to love it, whether it be, you know, your job or, you know, the food you're eating. Side note, not contest prep at times. Or whether it be like just your general environment, right? I think that's something that's apparent if you're a natural bodybuilder for at least a decade, right? And because there are going to be times where you also don't love it. There are going to be times where it may feel like you're falling out of love with it. So like really having those intrinsic driving factors as to why you stick with it is going to be something that allows us to be successful in our own endeavors in life. And it's crazy to look back at how things have progressed. Stating from like this head injury that really sparked your journey for natural bodybuilding. My end, I was a little bit overweight, and then, you know, that sparked my journey into natural bodybuilding. So what would you say are some of the biggest things you love about natural bodybuilding that, you know, keep you consistent with it?
I think the main thing I love, and it, like you said, those intrinsic factors are absolutely it. Like I love the process of what bodybuilding is. It can be monotonous and boring for some. And I think a lot of people give it up because it's not exciting, especially like you said, if you've been doing it a decade as a natural, like you've got to love the process, because the quick gains quickly subside, and then you have to just focus on doing the do, ticking the boxes, as they say, each and every day. And I get huge value out of that. Just the fact I can wake up out of bed every morning and have something in my life outside of work, outside of relationships, that I can be like, hey, if I hit my nutritional goals, if I get my training session in, if I execute all those processes that I know are going to lead to such outcome, like I'm depositing pennies into that muscle growth or fat loss or whatever it is, bank account, my bodybuilding bank account, I can lie in bed at night and be like, despite everything that else that maybe went on that day, like it was a successful bodybuilding day. And it kind of gives me that focus every single day to work towards. And I'm lucky enough, similar to you, Ishak, is like, hey, we have a business out of this. We get to help other people. We get to see the benefits and the joy that it brings to them, and the quality of life improvement, which is a huge driving factor. And I also, not that I don't kind of train and eat the way I do and be consistent to be a role model to my clients, but I like that I can be that. And I can be a bit of a pillar and an example of someone who's consisted through, despite maybe things not being quote unquote like the best genetics or whatever, and someone who's going to be like a obvious pro or something like that. So I quite like kind of being an example to people. Like if you keep going for an extended period of time, and you need to enjoy the process for that to occur, you can create something very impressive beyond what you thought maybe would be possible for you. So I like that too. And a lot of the behaviors and habits that we need to be successful in bodybuilding, we need to be healthy in life. Apart from like, you know, probably the stage you're getting to where you're getting down to those essential levels of body fat, hormones aren't in the best place, but physiologically you're not in a healthy place fully. Apart from that competitive point in prep, like outside of that, like your off season, like it's a really healthy lifestyle. We have to pay attention to sleep, micronutrients, total kind of food intake, even like body fat. We can't let that go too high. Of course, maybe being in a surplus and getting to certain heights of body fat isn't always the healthiest in that short term. But a lot of the practices that we do, daily step counts, like high volume resistance training, maybe even cardio, if you incorporate some of that, like these are such healthy things to be doing. And I think the natural bodybuilding side particularly has that kind of like health as a core kind of principle towards it. Obviously, the enhanced side, not that it can't be like somewhat healthy for someone, but it's never as healthy as doing it without the assistance. So I just always loved those elements of it. And similar to you, Ishak, I think now that the evidence-based space is growing and new research is coming out relatively regularly. You've got some of the younger guys coming through, getting their PhDs. I think of someone like Milo Wolf. I think of Data-Driven Strength, the team over there, Max Coleman, all of these great guys who are now doing research directly in our field, which is actually in its infancy. It's quite exciting for me because I just enjoy, like, I'm a bit of a geek at heart. I like kind of reading into the studies, learning how can I apply them to myself. And whilst bodybuilding is inherently a very simple kind of thing, when you zoom really out, you can get into the weeds. And if you enjoy that and it doesn't like imbalance you and doesn't kind of cause you any stress, which I know it does for some people, then it can be a really fun thing. And so even like having the weekly podcast is something I embrace and enjoy, where I can be a student for like a couple of hours every single week, which is just fun. So it kind of gives me so much that I needed out of life, like being a forever student, elements of health, being able to progress and feel like I'm growing every single day. Yeah, I love bodybuilding for that. And I'll forever be grateful for it. Not necessarily even the competitive side, like in particular, but I don't know if I would have stuck out the non-competitive side if I wasn't competitive, if you know what I mean, to the level that I have.
Absolutely. Great points. And health is definitely a core principle I also believe is part of natural bodybuilding. And you don't even have to resistance train consistently to get a lot of those positive adaptations towards our health. Like, if we look at the majority of the population who are sedentary, it's like, hey, maybe if we just get you active 4 days a week, that'll be a good initial start for you. And then we'll progress that into, you know, whatever goals you have in terms of your body composition, resistance training towards that. And I think it can be healthy, and being a sport, natural bodybuilding has some unhealthy tendencies, but our goal is to always keep health at the forefront and always approach things in an ethical manner. And that's a big part where, like, staying up to date with this research comes in. You know, we not only utilize that research as guidelines to help guide our decision making, but we also use our experience. Like, it's never always a definitive answer that comes from the literature. And I think staying up to date with it should be at the forefront of any good coach's, you know, weekly, whatever, right? You see a study on Instagram, whatever, got to dive into it. But also understanding how to, like, read that literature is equally as important. So, for example, I had Dr. De Souza recently on the podcast.
Nice. Great guy.
You had him on too. Yeah, super sweet guy. And he pointed out so many things in the meta on longer muscle length training, the range of motion paper. And he pointed out so many things with the limitation and effect size. And I'm like, man, I didn't really catch that the first time I went through the paper. So, like, these conversations we have with professionals are not only for us to grow, but it's also to expand that knowledge for people to make it a little bit easier. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes it can lead to analysis by paralysis, just because everybody has all this information, everybody's shouting XYZ. And I think what research investigates is what we do in the gym with bodybuilding. Like, we hypothesize about something and then we implement a design, some trial and error, and then we figure out if it works or not. So you can't really skip that trial and error phase you can't really skip that trial and error phase if you want to build something great or that's, like, specific and catered towards you. And I know, Steve, we were chatting a bit before we started the episode, and you are prepping this year. So why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit of an insight as to your off season, and then you're now working with Cliff Wilson.
Yeah, for sure. So I last competed in 2021, and I managed to make it all the way to WNBF Worlds. I don't know if I have this tendency to discount my progress sometimes, but I'm going to do it here. It wasn't the most competitive WNBF Worlds. I managed to come second in the middleweight class. at WNBF Worlds. And so that was pretty cool. And yeah, it's just that season as a whole felt, it's weird because it shouldn't feel this way, but it kind of feels like a little bit of a disappointment. I feel like I have a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth, and I don't know why, because I shouldn't, because it was definitely my best package that I ever brought to stage. It was wildly improved from 2017, but I think it's because I had so many just wasn't quite there. So it's like a second place, like a fourth where I wanted a top three and things like this. And it was great that I actually got the invite for WNBF Worlds, because I didn't, because I wasn't top three at the WNBF UK, where that would give you the qualification. So that's where my focus was. I was like top three. And then when I came fourth, I was just like, fuck this shit. I was just so frustrated. So it kind of, it left me with a lot of want for more and to be better. And it's actually so interesting. I don't know, have you judged any shows yet, Aisha? No, you haven't been a judge yet. So when you do that, assume you do it, if you get the opportunity, it's so cool. Once you have been an athlete and been on stage, and then you take the kind of perspective of the judge, it just gives you a whole new insight into the sport. And yeah, being a judge was very confronting in some ways. And I can absolutely see now also, because it made me really stringently look at how they're judging the symmetry round, the muscularity round, how important is condition versus like symmetry and shape and these sort of factors. And so it just made it very obvious to me where I was lacking. And I very much was lacking in symmetry. Like, I'm not a beautiful bodybuilder by any means in terms of my shape. Like, I have a big rib cage, front relaxed is not one that looks great on me. And I have to really work on that. And I've had to really focus on some muscle groups to try and make that look better, more symmetry wise. Mostly when people think of symmetry, they think of like, hey, top to bottom looking like relatively well balanced in terms of muscularity, left to right. But it's more so that X frame. They want like tiny waist, broad shoulders, sweeping quads, all of that. I don't have the sweeping quads. I don't have the tiny waist. I don't have the like massively capped delts. So these were big focuses for me. It was like, just if you can't get the quads to sweep, because that's very much out of my control in terms of muscle bellies, make them as freaking huge as possible. If you've got a big rib cage and you've got a wide waist, try and get those lats, particularly like the lower lats, to come out, see if you can get those to show from the front, and then just go like, what's it called? Spam lateral raises, you know? that's what everyone's doing on TikTok, isn't it? Or something, trying to avoid that social media platform. But these have been some big focuses. So I definitely looked at, it was really great to have competed, kind of then reflected upon that and seen, hey, I didn't need judges' feedback. I'm a judge and I know my physique, but particularly having judged and now seeing where people are winning and losing, I just knew exactly what I needed to work on this off season. So it gave me a great focus. So that's been a huge focus for me, is those specific muscle groups. And just like you said, I think it's easy with research sometimes to get a bit caught up in it, and it can take you away from some of just the core fundamentals of bodybuilding. And a core fundamental of bodybuilding is there's nothing getting around hard work. You've got to push hard. You've got to push your recovery to its limits at times. And that's just what I've been doing. I've been trying not to be like afraid to do anything and push myself and push my body hard whilst taking care of the things outside of the gym in terms of sleep and obviously nutrition to maximize my efforts in the gym too. Knowing that the gym and what we do in the gym is the stimulus for muscle growth. It doesn't matter what you're doing elsewhere. If you haven't got that progressive resistance training going on, you're not going to be growing. So that's been a huge focus for me, driven by those weaknesses that I had that confronted me that season. And I was just like, if I really want to go like pro, and that is now an ambition of mine to go pro within the WNBF, or I'm not particularly fixated on a natural bodybuilding federation, but one of the bigger ones, then I've got to kind of bring up my symmetry. And so we'll see if I've done enough. Like you said, I've just started prep and I've definitely gained muscle. It's just damn obvious to me when I comparison photos. But it's whether or not I've gained enough and I've changed my physique enough to be able to compare against people who just, you know, Aishak, you've been on stage with people where they barely have to try and pose and they already look like they've got the wildest X frame ever. And you're just like, God damn it, man. You have the wildest shape. And if they come in condition, oof, it's really hard to battle against people like that. But I want to now be able to, I don't want to be looking at like, hey, am I going to be within the kind of front running? I want like every show I go to, I would love to be challenging for a front running spot and see where I can go. My ultimate goal is to get to WNBF Worlds again. That's really it, because despite placings and everything that I'm talking about here and wanting to go pro, I want to really enjoy it. And that was so fun, going to Worlds and being able to hang out with like people like Alberto Nunez. And I got to meet Dr. Joe Kolumbeski as well. If Cliff is there, Cliff Wilson, like you said, is now my coach in my corner. He's handling my nutrition. And yeah, if he can be there and I can get some crazy photos with him, like that would just be, that'd be for the soul, the bodybuilding soul. Where I place, much less important at that point.
I love how there are these other things on the priority list above like the actual being on stage and posing with people, right? I think show day is personally my least favorite day, just because I appreciate the process and pushing myself, or using that as an outlet to push myself. And show day can be like kind of hectic at times. Nerves are high, you're anxious, and you have to wait around all day. And then, you know, so I definitely am excited to be following along. And before we get into some of the key factors that led you to decide to work with Cliff, let's go ahead and talk about some of the things you've done, and we could back and forth it, things that we've done within our off season to facilitate those improvements. But let's hear about yours first, because it's specific to you.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I guess what have I done? If I was to like look broadly at what I've done differently, because that's often what people ask you, like, what did you do differently to grow muscle? It's like, I mean, I didn't do that much differently, because I've been growing muscle my whole career. So a lot of the fundamentals have still been there, still been in somewhat of a surplus, still been pushing my training very close to failure, still been trying to run at volumes that are high, but I'm recovering from them and progressing. So a lot of the kind of core fundamentals have been there. I have been incorporating, you mentioned it with Dr. D'Souza, with the kind of range of motion research and things like this. I have been doing more length and partials. That's something I've been really incorporating heavily over the last year, but I was slowly introducing them. I got to train with Milo quite a while ago and chat with him and everything. And so that really piqued my interest. And when I thought about it, and I spoke to so many people on the podcast, like so many people in the industry about their thoughts and feelings towards it, and it was just very interesting. And I kind of came to a conclusion, hey, there's very little to lose here, if anything, and there could very well be something to gain. And in some cases, I don't know if you feel the same way, Ishak, but for example, like pulling motions, it just makes so much sense that you'd be leaving something on the table if you were very obsessive about this full range of motion, got to pull the bar down to my clavicle or touch my belly every time, and you have that like precise technical failure kind of cutoff point, I think you could be leaving quite a bit on the table. And so that's where somewhere I've been incorporating a lot. Calf raises, I've been doing them a lot on calves, principally on calves, because that's where most of the research is, right? And I actually feel like my calves have grown. Like for once, I feel like they've grown. And I'm like, man, I trained calves for like a decade and they didn't grow. And now I'm just like blasting them. But also getting a bit more comfortable with pushing my RERs and proximities to failure more, rather than having an average of maybe a 2 to 3 RER, I'm closer to like a 2 to 1 on average, especially with that meta regression that came out from Zach. Many limitations to that, that maybe don't even apply necessarily to someone who's training 6 days a week like I am, but it still just made me want to push a bit harder and make sure I was getting uncomfortable and not like, hey, there's a deload programmed in week 6, so let's just deload. It's like, do I actually need it or should I push through? Again, I just mentioned Max Coleman before, and his research kind of elucidated that for me, where it's like, hey, didn't seem like they really got too much from the deload. Did they need that? And so I've just been, yeah, it kind of got me, some of this research actually allowed me to go back to my roots of like what bodybuilders have been doing. They've been pushing themselves really, really hard, training close to failure. So it's just, it's funny how it can do that for you sometimes. So even with that technical failure definition, that's something I've got more, like I used to be quite strict, because like technique is the foundation before everything. You shouldn't be adding volume or adding intensity before your technique's like perfect. And so I think I had too fine of a perfect technique definition. It's like, hey, if my lateral raise, I have to like put some welly in there. Like it looks a little ugly maybe from the outside, but if you feel that tension and disruption through the side delt and it's productive, go with it, Steve. like ignore what like your very precise analytic brain is telling you you should be doing. Like go with what you're getting. Like you said, all of us are our N equals one kind of case study here. So I've just been really challenging my physique in that way and challenging my preconceived beliefs about things and making sure I was making myself very uncomfortable regularly. But yeah, something like my lateral delts as an example that I wanted to bring up, like my frequency, I think for the last year has been 5 times a week and I'm just chucking like everything at them. But once I get to like five, six sets, if I even push that high, it just starts to feel unproductive. So I'm like, hey, listen to your body, listen to that feedback. You're going to come in like in a couple of days and train them, or like a day or so and train them again. Same with carbs. Like I just was like, hey, if you're recovering, like they feel fine the next day, theoretically you could train them. I haven't always taken that kind of precise rationale, but it's allowed me not to be worried. Hey, I need like 72 to 48 hours or 48 to 72 hours before I've trained a muscle again. It's like, no. If it's feeling recovered, feeling good, you can perform, go for it again. For some of these smaller muscle groups, it's just worked well. Not worrying about arms so much at all and just end of sessions, 1 to 2 sets, like they're a strong point for me. Don't worry about them. But things like quads, really emphasize those, put them at the front. Don't put too much else on your lower body days. Really give your legs some due diligence. It can be tempting to add like arm work and delt work and all this extra kind of not fluff but work onto those days when leg training is hard as fuck. It should be, and so you really need all your efforts to go towards those if you want them to grow their best. So I've been doing that and just making sure to feel like I'm ticking every box I can possibly and not leaving anything on the table where I feel like I could be, but at the same time not moving too far into just the like go harder and like harder is better, all of those, kind of trying to keep my sense of, hey, is this worth the fatigue it's creating? Are you recovering from it? Don't just add more for the sake of more, being happy just to kind of find a level of work within the gym and hold that for extended periods of time versus trying to always add or progress something really aggressively. And I think that's really laid in my favor in terms of just being able to generate a stimulus for an extended period of time. So I rambled all over the place there, Ishak, so I don't know if that brought any thoughts to your mind.
all good. I'm sure people will take a lot of gems out of that. And I don't know, something you said earlier reminded me of a quote from Tom Platz, and it was, don't be a victim to your genetics. Let your genetics be a victim to you. And of course, genetics play a large role in bodybuilding, right? Outside of our propensity to gain tissue, it plays a huge role in our skeletal structure, right? Which really dictates the symmetry of things. And we also can't change our muscle insertions or origins. But something we can do is beat the shit out of it until it grows. No, I'm just kidding. But obviously train it with the appropriate level of volume, frequency, and intensity over time. And be smart with programming. And then fingers crossed, it'll grow, but it'll grow confidently. I could say that. And I think the biggest thing for me, I just refused to go through another off season where I did not bring up my back. And so something big for me was the use of specialization blocks where, for example, I would have my exercise selection catered towards certain muscle groups. Maybe like a little 1 to 2 more exercises or either an additional amount of a set volume. And I think doing a 2-to-1 ratio in terms of my pulling to my pressing movements has been something that's been massive. And I had a dedicated arm day program. That's something I think would just help me improve everything overall in addition to my back. And you mentioned some of the findings from those like recent papers that came out, 3 recent ones that were like on fire on social media, was the range of motion one, the failure one, and the deloading one. And I think for the long muscle length paper and I'm sorry. Do you remember who it was off the top? It was Milo, the author of the paper.
Well, he did the meta-analysis on range of motion. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been including more length in partials. I appreciated Dr. De Souza's dive on the paper. And I think naturally, like, bodybuilders have been doing it through their exercise selection over years, right? And I'm sure if you look back at like old Jay Cutler footage, I'm sure he's doing length and partials too. And I think the thing about these papers is they come out on social media and it's kind of just like a spotlight on that topic and people just like jump on it, but it's like you got to kind of pull back and be rational about it and just think, people have been doing this for years. People have been like training to failure 4 years often, right? And then in terms of deloading, I think it's individual in terms of deloading. So I think it depends on someone's training level of advancement. Like if they're a beginner versus more advanced people, I think more advanced people can lend more auto-regulation into their training and maybe take an auto-regulated deload. Whereas like a beginner or intermediate, maybe they can utilize a reactive deload. Maybe they can be done proactively. But I definitely think that it's more complex than just like, hey, you don't need a deload, right? Because if you don't deload, I think this is a quote from Jared Feather, if you don't deload, your body will deload for you, right? Whether it be an injury or whatever the case may be. And okay, so now that we've spoken about improvements, what we've kind of done within our training, our thoughts about some of the research, why don't you go ahead and give us a dive into your thought process and decision making into working with Cliff?
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, in terms of all those papers and everything, I've had like every author on the show to talk about them and have deep dives. And yeah, it's just been so interesting. I think a big take home, just in addition to everything we said there, was I used to try and think there was a very clear optimal way to train. And I used to kind of probably get on a bit of a high horse in terms of, hey, like my methods are backed by science and they're clearly the optimal path. And I've taken a real step back from that. And I've appreciated more like, hey, why are these other guys able to get like crazy results? It's like, well, actually science isn't giving us like this specific protocol, Steve. You've kind of drawn that out, or maybe you've seen and you've been influenced by someone else who has. There's so many roads to Rome. It just allowed me to be a bit more flexible in my thinking of how can I get to this outcome of muscle growth. So I think that's helped with my own programming and individualizing things for clients too. So that's been cool. But in terms of Cliff, so Cliff is someone I've had again on the podcast multiple times, had loads of chats with him. He thinks differently. Again, I like to go very scientific and very analytical in that sense, but he draws upon other experiences and other ways of processing things. And we've also had him over for a seminar in the UK, and I met him then and hung out with him. And I could just tell he's just a very grounded individual, really cool. I get on with him super well. And I mean, his track record speaks for itself in terms of the number of client wins and everything. And you look at his like Instagram and the clients he's taking to stage, everyone seems to get in great shape. And people I've spoken to have been coached by him, sing his praises. And I don't think he'd have been as successful for as long as he has in the industry without being an amazing coach. So as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the best coaches out there. But he also doesn't share tons of information. Like, he'll come on a podcast, talk about things, but in terms of his approach and the way he does things, it's kind of kept behind in his coaching methodologies. So I was like, I kind of want to learn about that. And so that's why I ended up going with Cliff himself, because I think, like we're talking off air, he thinks differently to me. He might not program quite how I do, but I know how important it is. And I think you'd agree with this, Ishak. Like, you need your client to trust you. And if they don't, it's not going to work well, because they're going to be second guessing you. They might change something or not adhere. I trust Cliff wholeheartedly. If he tells me to like jump off a cliff, I'm fucking over it. it's done, right? And so I trust him to get me in shape. So even if there's something where I'm like, I'm not sure about that, one, I know I can ask him because I've already asked him questions and he's explained. But two, like, I just, his track record speaks for itself. So I'm very confident. And I know if there was anything that was super off, I'm advanced enough to be able to like, I don't need him to babysit me. I can see if something's off, I can communicate to him, and we can have that level of dynamic conversation, which I think is just going to allow me to hopefully bring my best to stage. Like, everyone talks about it, right? Look at the best of the best athletes. They all have coaches. I'm like, I think I'm actually someone who would be quite coachable. And I don't know what it is that's not let me let go of the reins. I haven't fully let go because I'm still doing my training, of course. Like, I've struggled to let go of that because I've really found, I think, something that's working well for me. So I'm struggling to let go of it. But the nutritional side, I'm like, there's only so much like individualizing of your nutrition you can do. I haven't got any weird quirks that I like doing that kind of lead to results. So yeah, I'm good for that. And then with peaking in particular, obviously Cliff is well known for it. And also getting to that like gnarly level of condition. We're speaking off air. Aishaki, you said you managed to bring your glutes in. And I'm like, maybe there's a bit more to come off. And you get to that point of prep where you're like, should I keep pushing for more condition? Or should I pull back and maybe like eat up a little bit and that will reveal more condition? And I just wonder if having someone just take over that so I don't have to think about it is going to help me and I can have lower stress. I'm also just, I don't know if I said I'm highly strung, but I can get quite anxious. And especially in prep, everything's heightened. So I think just having someone to just do all that stuff for me and they can take that stress off me, like I want to be able to do that. And then I've also managed to grow my competitive roster more and more. And you know how much time competitors take when you're really trying to help them with every step of the process. So I just think it will allow me to focus more on them and that knowing my bodybuilding is being taken care of by someone else. So yeah, I'm excited. Oh, the final thing on the peaking, I was going to say, I have quite a conservative approach. I've never really done anything particularly out there with my own peaking, or sometimes with clients I've had some opportunities when we've had enough time to do some like more challenging things. But I think Cliff has more experience. And so I'm interested to see what he might do with me and what I can learn from him in that.
I'm pretty sure he's well known for utilizing rapid backloads. So I'm excited to see it, man. And have you started prep yet?
So it's funny, the last, I think we started working in January, so now it's March. And so the last like however many weeks, it's just been like, I've been essentially eating around maintenance, which has been like around 4,000 calories or something. It's just kind of ridiculous at this point. My body's just like, doesn't want to put on weight. And so I had some life stress. And so things were a little bit uncertain in that regard. And he was like, hey, maybe we just do like a little diet now, just to make sure we're a bit ahead of schedule, to make sure that if anything crops up, we have time to be able to pull back and put you back in. So just this Tuesday, I started like, I don't know even how it works out because I haven't calculated all the calories out, but it's like a 300 calorie deficit or something. So I still feel like I'm massing at this point. So it's not a low amount of calories at all. So I don't know if it's prep, and I kind of don't even want to like say I'm in prep. I kind of just want to go with it. You know what I mean? Like something about not, when you say you're in prep, you kind of, these blinkers come on, you get very obsessive about stuff. People want to talk to you about prep. And I'm like, I kind of like just, it just happens in the background. You don't have to think about it too much for the time being.
Yeah, people always ask me how prep is going. And it's like, well, I can go on a spiel about how my energy levels are shit and this and that. But it's just easier for me to say, oh, it's good. Like, because I feel fine. This is the easiest prep I've had to date. But it's also like, I don't want to go into details. And I would rather just like keep the interaction kind of short. I think that's maybe something that happens because I'm either introverted or that's just something that happens to us psychologically as we diet down. I believe it was the Minnesota Starvation Study, that legendary paper. Some of the psychological things people would exacerbate is secluding themselves. And whenever they would eat, they'd go eat their food in like a damn corner away from everyone with no like stimulation. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. Definitely bodybuilder. Sounds like a bodybuilder there. But yeah, man. Okay, cool. So what would you say some of the things you love about coaching people are?
Nice. So, and by the way, just on the point of being introvert, like it makes me extra introverted, prep does. So like I'll be walking my dog, and if there's like another dog on the side of the road, now I might be like, yeah, it's fine, we'll like interact with them. I'll be like, I'm crossing the road, I avoid any social interaction possible. I'm not doing this. So it can get really bad. And I know some people in the gym, they're like, I thought you're in a really bad mood with me, but like actually it's just you and dieting, right? And it's like, I just didn't want to interact with anyone, put my hoodie up, you know, you get into that mode, which is a bit of a shame, but it's just, you become a little bit of a different person in prep, unfortunately. Some characteristics deepened.
Do you have a resting bitch face when you train?
Probably, I expect so. Well, I just look dead in the face, you know.
I think I do too. I when I train, I take my glasses off, so I can't see much, and like it's kind of blurry. So I'm just like, you know, I hope people don't think anything, but it's too funny.
That's brilliant. Yeah, with coaching, man, it's it can be so rewarding to. Especially the way, it's funny because online coaching can be so impersonal if you don't do it in a certain way. But I love getting video check-ins. I like having a consultation with someone initially to kind of get what they're about and really have a kind of deep dive conversation about them. I find if I didn't do that, I'd be so far behind in knowing who they are as a person, what their background is. They could give me all the information, but it's not quite the same as talking with them. And then, they might say something that just cues you to ask a question or something during that consult. So having those interactions with people and just knowing and hearing them about their troubles, and then also knowing that you have the tools to be able to help them, it's just like so rewarding. Like I love helping people, and I love being able to give back as well. Just knowing where I've been and the benefits that it's given to me and how better off I feel for it, and then being able to clearly see that with other individuals, it's really great. I like feeling wanted and needed. I think everyone does to some extent. And I don't want to feel like someone needs like me as their like, don't know, dad or mum to like console them through things, but like feeling like I'm a useful asset in their corner to help them through tough times. Yeah. And bodybuilding, of course, is like training, nutrition, but it encompasses many things in life. It's for the people that we coach, it's a huge part of their life. It's a cornerstone. It's actually something incredibly important. That's why it's hard for a lot of us to get a coach when we do this, because we're like, do we want to let go of the, like, this is precious to us. So when someone gives me the kind of keys to their training and nutrition, like it's like massively humbling, especially when I get very competitive clients doing it. But anyone to do that, to put their trust and faith in me, like I don't ever take that for granted. I'm actually quite often say like, I know like you like me, you kind of see my content, you really align with it, but I still want to earn your trust. I want you to really believe in the program, believe in me, and feel like you can tell me anything. And so to be able to develop those like close bonds and relationships with clients, even though it's online, and like I said, we have the consultation and then we have video check-ins. So not live, but you still get to like, someone leaves you a video diary, basically. They really give, and some people really pour a lot into that. Other people, not so much. But to be able to like be that person in that kind of corner and that, like rock in their corner, and to be able to help them progress their physique, their knowledge, and then see, like we mentioned at the start, all the benefits that bodybuilding brings us, and see that it's having benefits to other areas of their lives. Like you probably had this, Aishak, when you have a coach, like maybe they're a coach or they're looking to get in the industry, and then they're a couple of years with you and now they've already got like a fully fledged online coaching business. You're like, oh damn, like I'm not sure they'd be able to do that if they hadn't had that kind of almost mentorship from you. So yeah, being able to see that is so rewarding. So yeah, those relationships and seeing people, again, kind of not need you, but really benefit from you in their corner and take them to places with their physique, their knowledge, and potentially their lives that they couldn't have gone on their own. It's so rewarding.
Definitely resonate with that. I am incredibly thankful to all my clients that do trust me with their coaching and education as well, right? And it's been a while, huh? Coaching almost a decade. How about you? Almost a decade too. I mean, yeah. So we first started, nobody was online coaching. And I used to use spreadsheets, and now I have like my own branded app, but I used to use spreadsheets, and I used to write these massive long emails. They're so funny to think back to. And I think, I don't know, one of the things I love about coaching, I guess it differs if it's like I'm talking about a Gen Pop person versus an athlete. So like for an athlete, I think it's very accomplishing helping them fulfill their best, right? But for athletes, they can't really see something as a big win unless it's that big win. You know what I mean? For a Gen Pop person, the teeny tiniest things they get excited about. I hit my macros this week. I hit my steps this week. I hit a new low this week. And they're so excited about it. And it's just infectious. And I love helping people win. And given my own journey and my experience, that's like one of the things that has kept me coaching throughout the years. And I don't think I would be able to have coached this long if it wasn't a genuine passion. And I think it's cool because I could tie in like my old nursing school knowledge and like the communication skills that I learned into it. And that also helps me understand like some of this anatomy and physiology stuff. So it's cool. When I initially started, obviously this wasn't going to be my profession, but what I was previously doing is almost like a stepping stone to allow me to do this successfully and competently and confidently, you know? So yeah, man. And cool. Coaching. And you have a lot of athletes hitting the stage this year.
I actually can't tell you the number off the top of my head. I think it might creep into double digits, but I don't typically, my roster is only about a quarter athlete. So I tend to work with about 40 odd people, maybe. 40 is probably my average number of people I work with, which I don't know. Some people might sound like a lot. I think a lot of people would think that doesn't sound like many at all. The people I've heard of working with incredible numbers. But I don't think much more than that with the way that I coach, I'd feel comfortable with. And I think I would, I don't know if I haven't got there yet where I need to cap competitors, but the amount that I like to put into a client and a competitor, I think I'd need to at maybe some point if it kept growing. I can't imagine peaking more than like a couple of people for a weekend. If I had like to peak 10 people for a weekend, I don't know how, maybe you get better at it over time. I certainly have got better at this coaching thing and my systems have improved and I can see things better and I'm more efficient, but still kind of wild to me. But yeah, there's definitely, like you said, there's definitely differences between competitors and then like the Gen Pop. And it's, I like having both. And I don't have too many very Gen Pop, like, I don't know, habit building and stuff like that. Although a lot of that stuff still applies to everyone else I work with. Most of the people I work with are coaches, but to see them be more confident, some of the most rewarding is just like, they just tell me how much more confident they are with their own business, with their own coaching. And when they go into the gym, they don't kind of feel like an imposter anymore. They're like, no, I know what I'm doing. If someone comes and questions me, I'm not like, oh no, they're going to teach me something new. Do I look like an idiot? It's like, no. I know what I'm doing. So, and also I imagine this is the same for you, Aishak. A lot of my people I work with, they don't have a lot of people in their like life that are bodybuilding or doing it to the level that they are. So it's just nice having someone who is into it as much as you are to be able to chat to and talk through things. So I like that I can be that person for them. And again, some coaches are afraid to be friends with their clients, and I form relationships. Some of the people are friends. Some people are just like, hey, they want that more. Just, hey, you're the coach. But a lot of my clients, I would say they're friends, and I definitely want to meet up with them, train with them, get like a coffee, or maybe they want to get a beer. I wouldn't stop my client getting a beer, but I wouldn't be. Anyway, I'm rambling.
No, I think it's definitely true. It is impossible to work with someone and be invested in their growth without building rapport and a personal relationship with them, right? But just because you build a personal relationship with someone doesn't necessarily mean it can't be professional. So that's the other thing too. And then I know you said, oh, you do like video check-ins. I do the same thing. I use Loom, and I think my cap is right around the same region, just because it's draining when you're sending like 10 to 20 minute responses and you're reading through their check-in and you're breaking apart each point. And it's like, you can't fake that energy, I guess. And yeah, man, good talk. So to kind of just round off this discussion, are there any gems you would like to leave the audience with, or are there any things on the forefront that you have coming out? Maybe follow along your contest prep on Instagram.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if people want to follow along with the contest prep, definitely just Revive Stronger on Instagram is where I'm going to be documenting it most. last time I competed, we did have a videographer that did maybe an episode every couple of weeks. I don't know if I'll do that this time. It's just, I don't know about you, Ishak, but when you try and document your prep, even if someone else is taking the helm of that, it's an added stress and deterrent that I don't really want. And if I can just kind of do it myself in some form, I'll do that. Actually, I was thinking I might do like weekly updates of posing, because it will force me also to pose more, to practice that. And I know I need to do that aplenty. So yeah, people can follow there. I'll probably put some vlogs of my own to some extent on the YouTube channel, which again, I think is just Revive Stronger. People can find that. And then anything in the pipeline, not in particular, the prep is the main thing this year. I think we may or may not do kind of a seminar. There's nothing on the cards in that regard for this year. Might just take a year off from that. And what was your other question? Rounding things out. So yeah, in that regard, I'd say, yeah, for people listening with their own, at least I feel like I have this responsibility as the podcast host, and I get these researchers on. And I think some people can feel a bit kind of maybe put off, because they're like, oh man, there's so much research to stay on top of all the time and it's confusing. Like, there's very rarely ever a paper to come out that is going to do, it's certainly not going to do a 180 on anything you're doing. If what you're doing right now is working, it's going to still work whatever paper comes out like over the next years. May it be worth having an eye on it, because it might tweak you to be a little bit more optimal, you could call it, with your programming or with your exercise selection or with your training. For sure, you could learn something from that. But if you just went back to what built muscle day one for your journey, it's still going to build muscle now if you apply the same principles. The principles won't ever change. And so that's always something that I try and bring people back to, because I think probably the same as you, Ishak, we're seen as people that are like, we get into the weeds and the nuance and the details, and we like to know some of the new exercise selection and movements from people like Kasim and this sort of thing. But we both also respect that it all falls under the principles. And if someone has a slightly different kind of want and they don't want to have to worry about some of those things, it's like, hey, we can still get a result with some of what people might think is just the core basics. You can't ever move away from those. So yeah, that's kind of, I guess if I was to leave a message, that's kind of what I would get people to think about.
Great points. Great, Jim. And team, if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and give us a screenshot and tag us on your stories. Go give Steve a follow on the Instagrams and give him massive luck and good energy for his coming season. And other than that, this is going to conclude this episode, team. Steve, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and best of luck with your prep as well.
Thank you. Talk soon.